All rise.
Good morning, be seated. Okay, next matter on our docket this morning, docket number 50269, Schuster versus State. Mr. Cristalli, are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Morning, Justices. May it please the Court. Justice, if I could try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, I will attempt to do so. The Court ready for us to proceed? Justices, I addressed the issue with regard to degrees of murder over 3 years with Mr. Owens. I asked that degrees of murder be presented to the grand jury and the defense, the instruction of self-defense. This court, in en banc consideration, heard those arguments about the constitutionality of the open murder doctrine. This court basically told us that open murder was okay for the purposes of grand jury, and ultimately instructions for degrees of murder were reserved for trial. I was not given that opportunity. The state was given the opportunity to present a murder charge of first degree. While the evidence did not support a charge of first degree murder, they were given that opportunity. Despite their burden of proof, the defense was unable to present the instruction of involuntary manslaughter, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary. Despite the fact that this court has said on numerous occasions, in Rosas and in Boykins, that the instruction of a lesser included offense is mandatory as long as slight or reasonable evidence is presented. Justices, more than slight or reasonable evidence was presented in this case. If I can direct your attention to page 24 and 25 of our opening brief, Mr. Schuster gave a lengthy statement to police. During the course of that statement, he said repeatedly that he did not intend to shoot Mr. Janolis. He did not intend to aim and fire the weapon into his body, that he did not intend to kill him, that he thought he had missed, that he had thought that the shot went into the house, that his intent was to go and retrieve a weapon for the mere purpose of scaring the assailants off of his brother and to save his brother's life. Nowhere does he say during the course of his interview that he intended to shoot at or into the body of Mr. Janolis. The fact that he did not intend or did not even know that the shot was fired at Mr. Janolis, the fact that this happened within split seconds, that the entire event only lasted a few seconds, the fact that his brother was getting pummeled and beaten on the side of their own house, that we have presented more than ample evidence to support that theory, that is more than we have to do in order to be entitled to an instruction of a lesser offense of involuntary manslaughter. There is no argument to the contrary. This is not burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt by the defendant to be able to get that instruction before a jury. As Boykins has said, as Rojas has said, as this court has held in the past, all we have to do is present some evidence. And it doesn't matter that our defenses may be contrary. In Boykins, the defense had a contrary position to what was originally stated by the defendant. That did not matter. The lesser included instruction was given, even though the defense didn't want it in that case. Why should they have the opportunity in a case that certainly does not justify a first-degree murder to get that in front of a jury and the defendant not have the opportunity to present the lesser included offense of involuntary manslaughter when we have presented that evidence overwhelmingly?
The voluntary manslaughter instruction was given, and that was rejected by the jury, correct?
Yes, and that doesn't matter. And the case law is absolutely clear, specifically in Boykin. Boykin says, I'm sorry, it's Rosas. Rosas says, in determining whether lesser included jury instruction is warranted, the court must focus on whether credible evidence admitted at trial warrants a lesser included offense, not whether the evidence is sufficient to prove the greater one. That's irrelevant to this analysis. This
right, but the jury's finding was no voluntary manslaughter. It rejected that because it found second degree. So why would not the error be harmless, since if the jury didn't find voluntary manslaughter, it would not have found involuntary in any event? Do you follow the...
Yes, Justice Pickering. In our opinion, the error is never harmless when it comes to an instruction. If the law calls for the defense's opportunity to present an involuntary manslaughter instruction, if it says that we have presented slight evidence, reasonable evidence to be presented despite a contrary theory of defense, we are entitled to that instruction. It is irrelevant that the jury dismissed the voluntary manslaughter charge. Rosas says it. This court has held it. The analysis is simple. If the defense presents slight evidence, reasonable, to the jury, on the issue of involuntary manslaughter, we are entitled to that instruction. That's the analysis that has to be conducted by this court.
And the whole of your client's statement to the police was played, it was played on videotape to the jury, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And another thing you have to take into consideration with regard to the voluntary manslaughter charge is there is error there as well, based on Crawford. And that's another issue that we raised before this court. The Crawford instruction was not given in this case in the voluntary manslaughter charge. So in addition to us not getting the involuntary manslaughter charge as we're entitled to by law, the voluntary manslaughter charge was constitutionally flawed in that it did not have the Crawford instruction and proof beyond a reasonable doubt language within that instruction. This trial lawyer has to take responsibility for that omission, but the state does also, and so does the district court judge. Because when we went back, as Justice Douglas understands, Justice Paraguay understands, and Justice Pickering understands, there is a long-standing policy to accept stock jury instructions. Stock jury instructions on the voluntary manslaughter charge were given to us. They were accepted by the defense. We presented our own voluntary manslaughter charge, but the stock voluntary manslaughter charge was accepted. That stock voluntary manslaughter charge did not have Crawford language. And that's problematic as well in this case in terms of the constitutionality and the failure to present the necessary language of proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the state must prove in that particular charge.
Mr. Castrelli, do we just isolate the jury instructions or do we take all the jury instructions as a whole?
Well, I think you have to isolate them, and if there's constitutional error in one of them, that is grounds for a reversal.
Even if the other instructions clean up that factor?
Yes. Even if the other instructions, as the court understands, jury instructions are confusing as it is. if an individual charged with an offense, highest burden in the land is presented to that person, proof beyond a reasonable doubt by the state, that is not compromisable. Each and every element of the charge must be presented, and the jury must understand the state's burden as to each and every one of those charges. The jury cannot expect to infer the state's burden of proof through another jury instruction when the omission in that particular instruction is constitutional error. There is no compromise on the constitutional requirements that the state has in somebody's liberty. And not to mention the fact that all this has to be taken as a whole with regard to the evidence. This was not an overwhelming case. This was a close case. Donald Schuster and his brother got into a fight. They were in front of their yard. There was an altercation with four other individuals. They tried to flee. This is uncontroverted. They ran onto their own property in their own backyard. They were followed. Donald Schuster's brother's head was being kicked and punched, being witnessed by other individuals, not just Mr. Schuster, multiple other witnesses were able to watch this beating. Ms. Morgan says she feared for her boyfriend's life as he was in a fetal position getting kicked and punched. That's when Donald Schuster retrieved the weapon inside of his house. All happening within split seconds. That, justices, at the very least, is adequate provocation contained within the voluntary manslaughter charge. In addition to the close call, as far as the evidence is concerned, we also have to take into consideration the prosecutorial misconduct that we have alleged in this case.
Before you move on to that, can I just have you address, would you like to address the state's position with regard to the involuntary manslaughter? They read Boykin for the proposition that you cannot commit involuntary manslaughter by intentionally using a deadly weapon in the commission of the crime.
It's not the intentional use. Involuntary manslaughter can be used in many cases where there's a discharge of a firearm. And the argument is not as simple as saying, well, the fact that he actually pulled a trigger eliminates our ability to present involuntary manslaughter. No. It's whether or not he intended to shoot and kill John Michael Janolis, or whether or not it happened so quickly. Based on my client's statement, he didn't intend to kill. I didn't intend to kill him. I didn't intend to shoot him. I thought I shot into the house next door. I didn't want anybody to get hurt. I didn't want anybody to die. I just wanted to help my brother. I wanted to scare them by my shot. Justice Periguari, that is all we have to do, is be able to present slight evidence in order to get the entitlement of the involuntary manslaughter. I don't have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it was involuntary manslaughter. The jury could reject it and say, no, we don't agree with you. But I cannot have that opportunity taken away from my client. The jury should have an opportunity to consider that.
All right. You wanted to reserve some time. We got you down to a minute and a half, so I'm going to give you 2.5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Owens?
Yeah, please report Chris Owens for the state. I thought the state was very sensitive to its obligations as far as providing law to the court and supporting the instructions that were given to the court. The defense did not want the voluntary manslaughter instruction that was given out there or the verdict. They argued against it. In fact, they got up in their closing and said, no way is this voluntary manslaughter. That's because they were going all the way through the trial with an all or nothing approach. Even their attempt to put in this instruction on involuntary manslaughter was sort of a gratuitous thing that was done. If you look at the record, it was just sort of, well, we want to mark it and put it in there for the record. And it's interesting to note I couldn't find a copy of that, and maybe I missed it, but I didn't see a copy of the instruction that they had offered in the appendix that they provided to be able to assess the validity of the language of that instruction. But that aside, the state attempted to put in what was reasonably supported by the facts of the case, aware that it doesn't have to be consistent with the defense under our law, and that there just has to be some evidence. But it was the state's position with regard to the involuntary manslaughter instruction that there was absolutely no evidence that would support an instruction of that type. Now, the defendant keeps saying and hammering on this one element of involuntary manslaughter, that there was not an intent to kill. And he keeps talking about the statement that his client gave to the police where he says, I didn't intend to kill him, I didn't mean to kill him. That is not the defining element for involuntary manslaughter. That is the defining element between first and second degree murder. And that was given to the jury. The defining elements in the involuntary manslaughter were not addressed below, before the trial court. They have not been addressed in this appellate brief or in the argument that we just heard. And those require that you show that the killing occurred in the commission of an unlawful act or a lawful act which probably might produce such a consequence in an unlawful manner. And that's what they couldn't do here. They were going all or nothing in on the self-defense instruction and verdict that they were looking for there. Self-defense is not an unlawful act. That is a lawful act. It's a justifiable act. This other part where it's a lawful act in an unlawful manner, it sounds like they're trying to create some sort of imperfect self-defense through that that's not recognized. Involuntary manslaughter has always required a degree of criminal negligence. Some examples of that might be if he had introduced a gun and maybe it had been fumbled or fired accidentally when he was pointing it at somebody.
Well, isn't that what he essentially said? He didn't think he was going to shoot anybody, and there was no testimony to that effect that it could have been an accidental discharge?
Right, there was none. Absolutely none. And counsel, when he was up here, said that there was no intent to shoot into the body. That's not true. In the statement that he gave to the police, they walked him through the crime several times, And he admitted that he knew that he was firing the gun and discharging it at the person and that the bullet was going to strike them. And the police asked him repeatedly, what do you think could happen here? How did you not think the person could die from this? At a minimum, he admitted to the police that he knew that he was shooting at a person. At no time did he say it was an accidental discharge or he slipped, which is what we typically see in these involuntary manslaughter cases where somebody's pointing a gun, maybe they don't think it's loaded, maybe they're playing around with it, And there's a discharge, and it's reckless to do that. And it's criminal recklessness to the point that it's criminally negligent. And
what
that's
do you
how
do
we address
with the,
it.
What do you do with the statement from his police statement, I thought I shot into the house next door or something?
Well, he says that early in the statement when he's trying to kill the person, or he's shooting at the person, just trying to explain his initial reaction there. To what happened.
So that's a retrospective, is your spin on that?
Right. As far as his intent goes, he always admitted to the police that he was shooting at the person. I mean, and there's a progression to his statement to the police, where he starts out first saying the person was coming at him. I mean, in the 911 tape, and this really, I think, caused a problem with this theory in front of the jury, he said they were coming in the house. Then he said they were in the house. Then he said they were in the house, but they were coming at me. And this was contrary to all the physical evidence. Finally said they were trying to hurt my brother. And so I shot at them, and it was in defense of myself and defense of my brother. And that's kind of what he stayed with. But the evidence there, he fired three shots, and two of them went directly into the two victims in this case that were the subject of the verdicts. But his statement at the end of the interview was, I did it wrong. You're right, I did it wrong. I should have done like you said. I should have been, you know, shout that I've got a gun or something. I don't know. I could have. That's how it ended up. At no point at that, when they got to that point, they had confronted him with the evidence, I think, that was so compelling to the jury. I don't think this was a close case at all on this whole self-defense thing, because the first victim, Mr. Giannoulis, was shot in the back. Bullet went in at this angle. No way was he coming toward the defendant at that time. The second victim was trying to run away from him, and the bullet went in the right leg, through that leg, through the other leg. It went through and through both thighs, hit the femoral artery, and if he hadn't put a tourniquet on it, it would have resulted in a death on that second victim as well. His own brother said, "I can't effing believe you pulled the gun out." And the girlfriend of his brother, who was there, Crystal, said, "I'm concentrating on him not shoot anybody. This doesn't need to go that far, and I want to run out there and get in the middle of it. And then I heard gunshots, and I didn't run out there. The first gunshot I heard, I didn't run out there, and I saw these boys run. At that time, I think I was scared. I think I was scared." And she said that she was feeling that way at the time. She didn't think, and these were the defense witnesses, essentially, she didn't think that this was a necessary action either.
But what you just read, she said she wasn't out there?
She was standing at the window watching most of this. She saw the defendant run into the house. He's an ex-felon for assault and weapons offenses.
The issue that Mr. Castelli is raising, though, is in light of all this information that was provided to the jury, should this instruction not be given and allow counsel to argue about it?
It should absolutely be given every time there is a shred of evidence that would support the elements of that crime. And a lot of times there is in murders.
But is that for the judge to make that ultimate determination if there's sufficient evidence to the end, or is it this evidence has been presented that might go that way? It's up to the jury to determine that issue.
Well, we would have to change the law in our state on that, the rule, which has been considerably liberalized in the last 10 years already. I mean, it used to have to be a consistent defense. We changed that. We've had a whole series of cases here that have really liberalized this in favor of the defense. Yes, we could. The court could adopt a rule that just says we want the court to give instructions if they're asked for and not base it upon any objective criteria. We haven't gone that far at this point in this state, and I really think that we need to have some sort of a rule that bases it somewhere on the facts. If there had been facts here, it would have been given. We would not have objected to it, and that was the argument that we made very simply before the trial court at the conclusion of all the evidence. The court didn't contradict that. The defendant, they did not argue a single fact at that time and say, "But hey, wait a minute, this fits into involuntary because of these reasons." They didn't do that. The state's position, you know, on the front end of this case, you look at it, you say you've got unruly kids, maybe they caused problems, and it escalated, and it ended up with some kind of defense or something. Once you get into the facts, you learn, as the jury did, that that's not what happened here. The party had been over, there had been bad feelings, and the state's position was that this was an execution. It was a setup. It was like vigilantism, and the defendant, when he went into that house to get the gun, he lied about the safe because he didn't want to be tied to the firearm. He said he went into his brother's bedroom, but the police found out he knew where the safe was. He got the gun. He loaded it. The girlfriend saw him go rushing by her, straight out there, turn, and then fire into the first victim with that first shot going right through his heart and ending his life. The defendant admitted this. His witnesses, his friends, his brother, they admitted it. That's the evidence the jury got. And yes, you can have alternative things going on, and we could instruct on that, but there was nothing in the evidence that would have.
Well, and I guess that's what we're left with to make that determination, but there's statements in here that were presented. I didn't think I was going to even shoot anybody, you know. I didn't think that it was going to happen. I thought I was going to be able to just, like, have a gun and they would leave. Goes on to make other such statements. "He came at me, I just reacted, I just went off and it just hit him, you know, and I didn't even think I hit him." So there, you know, to say there's no evidence, there is some evidence. And then you go back to Rosas and you determine whether or not this is consistent.
But you'll notice that in there, it doesn't say which one of the bullets fired they're referring to. They were just put as a string kind of all together. Some of those reference the second shooting as well as the first shooting. So you'd have to look at them in the context in the statement. But none of the statements that the court just read fits within the elements for the charge. So we go back into Rosas and Lisby. However, if the prosecution has met its burden of proof on the greater offense, and I think this is what Justice Pickering was alluding to a few moments ago, and there is no evidence at the trial tending to reduce the greater offense, an instruction on a lesser included offense may properly be refused. Now, his intent about going out there and how he didn't think he was going to have to shoot anybody in that, that doesn't provoke involuntary manslaughter. It's when there's an unlawful or a discharge that happens in a reckless manner. And we don't have
isn't that reckless?
Going out there with a gun is not necessarily reckless. But maybe pointing it at them under a certain circumstance, or if it had discharged or been dropped, or he'd been, that's what we see in these, is recklessness. All of that goes to self-defense. It goes to self-defense, which the jury didn't buy into. It doesn't go to involuntary manslaughter. It's just not the kind of thing that we typically see. That's what distinguishes this case from the mass of what most homicides are, where there's a little bit of a gray area there, and it just wasn't here. And they have not articulated that at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Owens.
Justices, I think the colloquy between the court and Mr. Owens makes my case. This is, Mr. Owens made an argument, made a good argument for a jury. This is not what we're here today for. We're here to determine whether or not there was slight evidence pursuant to Rosas. And if there is, defendant is entitled to a jury instruction on a lesser included offense if there is any evidence at all, however slight, on any reasonable theory of the case under which the defendant might be convicted of that offense. Furthermore, I do not have to be relegated to a particular defense theory. In Rosas, in determining whether lesser included jury instruction is warranted, the court must focus on whether credible evidence admitted at trial warrants a lesser included offense, not whether the evidence is sufficient to prove the greater one. There has been evidence. They may not like it. They may have a contrary argument to make about it. They may be able to do that in front of a jury. But I have to have the right to present that to the jury pursuant to the law that this court has upheld.
Tell me a little bit about the process when the jury instructions were being settled and the involuntary manslaughter instruction was rejected.
Well,
again, not having the benefit of the basis for the rejection or the rejected instruction, what happened?
We requested that the involuntary manslaughter instruction be presented to the jury. It is the same involuntary manslaughter instruction that's articulated in the statute. We made a record on our request to present that to the jury. An analysis was not, I don't know that an in-depth analysis was conducted with regard to it, but the evidence speaks for itself. And I don't know that we have to do much more than request it after the evidence has already been presented through the course of the trial. You have ample evidence, which, Justice Peraguer, you had mentioned. I didn't think I hit anybody. I thought I shot into the house next door or something. Well, I really felt at first I didn't hit him at all. It was so quick.
And
I didn't think
shooting?
I hit him.
Counsel, Mr. Owens indicated that went to a different shooting.
And that's, I don't agree with that. And the record speaks for itself with regard to that. And I think Mr. Schuster's statement to the police speaks volumes to that. And that alone, this discourse between us alone is sufficient to allow us to get to a jury and present an involuntary manslaughter charge and let the jury reject it if they don't agree with our position on it. But certainly, we should be allowed to present it pursuant to the law that has been articulated by this court. And Justices, just before I move on, and I know that, Justice Peraguer, you wanted me to continue with the involuntary manslaughter instruction, we cannot miss the cumulative error that was caused by the prosecutorial misconduct that was made specifically in this case. To say to a jury that a trial began with the statements, there was a trial 18 months ago, ladies and gentlemen, a trial of John Michael Janolis that lasted 40 seconds. He had a jury of one. And you will all agree after hearing the evidence that there is not a death penalty in Nevada for holding parties or being a teenager. And you will be able to come back with a verdict of truth, a verdict of responsibility, finally, and a verdict that you can feel good about and you will be able to live with for the rest of your life. That, in conjunction with the constitutional arguments that we presented, is sufficient to justify and mandate a reversal in this case.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Owens, Mr. Cristalli. This matter will stand submitted, and this court will stand in recess until...